session number 11206, reel 10.
Mr. T. Thornthwaite, reel 10. Were the officers getting the same food as the men, Mr. Thornthwaite?
Oh, yes. The officers got exactly the same food as us, bully beef and biscuits and the tea. They got no different. I mean, these batmen just come and got his ration between them, just the same. The meals, the bully and beef, they were very monotonous. The odd time we got McConaughey stew. I remember one instance about McConaughey's. I told you we had the Polish battalion on our left in the front line. Now, when the ammunition came up at 8 o'clock at night, it was like Guy Fawkes on the Polish section. The shelling and all the tracers used to fire everything off. And an hour, they had nothing left. And they used to come up to our positions and ask if they could borrow ammunition, and we wouldn't give them any because we only got our ration. Anyway, the Poles could speak German. And one night we're going to go on a patrol, and we had two Poles join us in our position. And when we went on patrols, we had khaki overalls, suede boots with rubber soles, which called brothel keepers, cat comforter and your rifle and bandolier. Well, the Poles are dressed the same, but they used to shave all their hair off. They were just bald. Anyway, they joined us in the position. And we have an hour McConaughey's, we're getting it ready. The cook was in his little dugout preparing the McConaughey's before we went on patrol. And we had the two Poles sitting with us. And then the cook, there was mortars came over. I heard the buzzing of mortars came over and exploded around, and then we all got. And then the cook says, right, come and get it. So we went round, and we said to the two Poles with the mess tins, you get yours first. So they filled the mess tins up, filled ours up, we sat down. The Poles being first, they had half theirs eaten before we started. And I remember tasting mine. It was horrible. It was full of pepper. What had happened? The Poles ate theirs. What they must have thought about our... What had happened is the cook was... The big tin of pepper was putting some in when the mortars came over, and he dropped a lot in the Dixie. And he never said nothing because there was no more rations. And, of course, the poor Poles got this mixture. We couldn't eat ours. It was so strong. And then there was another instance where, as a speciality, the chap went down to the company position to bring the daily ration. And he come back, there were seven of us in our section, six of us in our section. And the chap come up and he had five prunes. That was one, supposed to be one prune per man as a treat. That meant one was missing. They were going to put them up against the wire and shoot them and all kinds for stealing one prune. Because, I mean, it was such a luxury, a prune, after all the dry food, the sand and everything.
What was it like during the day? Could you move around at all during the day?
No, you couldn't put your head up from the positions. And there was very little movement on either side during the day. Everything was practically done at night time because you were so exposed. Everything was exposed. I think I mentioned once that I was a good shot at Katnik. I represent the battalion in Lewis Gun, and Peking, I fired a brain against the Italians and got them. Now, in Tobruk, they took me down to the centre of Tobruk for 3 days and trained me as a sniper. And I went back up the front line. One of the job was in between our position and Jerry's position, there was a tank that had been knocked out and abandoned. Now, I had to go at night time. I took me rations for the day, and I used to get inside this blooming old tank, and I was supposed to watch the Germans, which is only 1,500 yards away, for any movement, but of course they wouldn't move the same as we. Now, it's the only time I'd ever seen explosive ammunition. I don't know where it come from. We didn't issue it, but it was left by the Australians. And I think it must have been picked up from the RAF for some time, because they used it. And they had it in the position. Now, when you're firing at 1,500 yards, you couldn't see where you hit anything. You couldn't see where any strike. And I used to use these, and I used to fire at a Sanger where the Germans were in, and I hit the Sanger, and I see a small explosion. I knew that I was on target with the thing.
Did you ever recall actually hitting anyone?
I don't think so. I remember one day, I used to do this in the morning. I used to be in the position with a pair of binoculars, and I used to sit there and observe, or I was in this tank forward, whichever it was. And I remember one, I watched this chap in the Jerry lines. He used to climb out, put his head up at the Sanger. I mean, imagine 1,500, it's quite a distance. Put his head up, and then he'd get over and he'd go somewhere. I don't know what he did, and then he'd come back again. So this time, obviously, I don't know whether he hit them or not at that distance, but I aimed at the Sanger, and there was a little, and he shot back. I always remember he run back and got in the Sanger, and then he stopped there. But I don't think we ever hit anyone. It was just a case of observing what was going on and to stop them from moving around observing us, because in Tobruk, at the back of our positions was like the top of an escarpment, like that, and then it dropped, and it was up like that to the Germans on the other side. Now, just behind us, they had artillery observation posts made of timber, about 20 feet high, and they were covered in canvas sacking from sandbags. And the artillery man used to climb up there and observe the German lines and do spotting for our artillery when they were firing over at their lines.
As a sniper, did you just have the 303 rifle? You didn't have telescopic sights?
No, I didn't have, not in those days. I had just the ordinary rifle. Now, it's funny. In this position, there was what they called an EY rifle, which is a rifle that you fire a grenade from. You put a cup on the front and you fire a ball shot. And in the British Army, well, you'd only use old rifles for that, because this was left by the Australians. Now, I found this rifle more accurate than my own rifle, and I used to use that. Very accurate. Of course, I don't know if you've ever fired a 303 rifle, but when the back sight was away up a height at 1,500 yards, I mean, the butt was down on your chest, not in your shoulder. It weighed down, and you were looking like that. But as I say, daytime activity, there was very little. And another humorous part is, I told you, I used to go down to company position every night and get the password and any details. Now, one night I went out and there was shelling when I was halfway down and all my markings and everything gone, and I got actually lost. I walked and walked. I tried to track my step because you couldn't see, it was pitch black. And I must have been on 3/4 of an hour, and I knew I was totally lost, and I walked round and I come to some barbed wire and I stopped. And I thought, God, barbed wire, where the devil are? I mean, so I stopped and I laid down near the wire, and then I heard German voices. And I thought, God, I must have somehow gone through our wire and I was into German lines. And I was trying to get some position, waiting till the searchlights come up above Tobruk, the harbour, when the rage used to go on at night. Waiting. And then I suddenly heard a Cockney voice. Well, I says, this is funny, German. Then I realised where I was. They had a prisoner of war cage in the centre of Tobruk. And during my wandering around, I'd come up against their wire. And I immediately got my bearings and got back to my own position. But it was so dark. I mean, the Easter even take a compass if they want to go to one position to another, a matter of 40 yards away. Because you could just miss it so easy and you go on. So we used to take compass bearings and work on them to get from one position to the other. As I say, the daytime activity was very little, but nighttime, everything seemed to start. You got your evening meal, and then you had patrols going out all over the shop.
Well, you said you were on patrols. Can you describe what kind of activity that the patrol would be involved in? What equipment you wore and what things you took out with you?
Well, there's two different types of patrols we used to do. One was observation. What used to happen, I used to get repeatedly picked, I don't know why, in a company. The same people seem to get picked every time because other people who coughed, they couldn't stop coughing. Other blokes was noisy and all the rest of it. So what we used to, as I say, formed up with this khaki overalls and all your gear and a cat can run on your head and your rifle. And
did you have to darken your face at all?
No, we didn't do any of that sort of thing because we were sunburned, you know, we weren't white, we were sunburned. And we used to be, the officer in charge used to tell us what was going to happen. Well, some nights, he'd say, we're going on an observation patrol. So you formed up in a square with an open, at the back, it was three sides, the front, two sides. These were with men. You had Tommy gunners at the front. You had people with the Bren guns at the side. And you start moving off.
How many men would this be, Mr. Thomas?
About 16 men formed this thing. Depending, again, what kind of patrol it was. So you'd move off, you go through your own lines, and open a knife rest on, because our line, our front wires is about 20 feet across and about 3 foot high, and you had to keep on opening sections to get out. And when you got outside of our main wire, there was a big anti-tank trench. Some places it was about 10 foot deep, other places it was 4 foot or 3 foot, and it was full of mines. And they had certain parts marked where you can go out, and then you got out of there. And once you got out of there, you come into the open, what they call no man's land. Now, we also had little five-man groups there in a little sangha or a dugger, a little trench. They used to be out there about 500 yards in front of our way, listening posts, and their idea was if any advance from the Germans during the night, they would hear it and then immediately come back into the front line and tell them, warn, it was like to warn them of any German patrols coming in. I used to move forward in this formation with the officer in the front of the section. Sometimes, observation thing, we used to take a blanket with us. Now, I'd often told friends about this, taking a blanket out on a night patrol in German lines and say, what the devil do you want a blanket for? Well, I used to go out and get in near German line, about 200 or 300 yards away. And on moonlight night, if you lay down, put the blanket over you, a grey-coloured blanket, you couldn't see it. Because if you hadn't a blanket, the shadow of your body, you could see your mouth. But if you put a blanket over and you couldn't see him, we used to lie there. And the Germans used to come out, about 10, 15 Germans, come out, and they'd stretch out and sit down or lie down on the bottom. And then the Italians used to come out and start making a minefield in front of their wire, put the mines in, and then the Germans was a protection against them, about us, you see. So we didn't do nothing, we just watched them. Watched them lay the mines. They also would take a compass bearing and everything. Another thing there, to get the distances, we knew it was a certain distance from our wire to their wire. So one lad had pebbles in his pocket, and every 100 yards he'd put the pedal in the other pocket, and this kept your distance. You knew within 10 yards of the when you come in the dark to them. And we used to watch this and take a bearing and then come back to our own lines about 5 o'clock in the morning, before, well, just maybe early before, just got dawn light, stand to. The next night, another patrol used to go out and move them mines further along. Lift them, put them further along in a different position. And then they'd return, and then during the day you'd hear the thing, boom, boom, the Italians blowing themselves up because they were in the wrong place.
What are your feelings on a patrol like this? You're going out at night, obviously you've got to be quiet.
Oh yeah, you've got to be dead quiet. You couldn't cough anything. I mean,
what are your own?
You were on about officers. I remember one patrol. This officer, he comes from Ponteilin. He's a bank manager. He's a lieutenant. This night, there was a special patrol picked. There was 20 of us. And this officer got us together. And he says, we've got to go out and get a prisoner from German lines because they think there's been a movement of different units and that. Want to know who's opposite us and that. He says, we'll go this, we'll do that, and we'll half you'll stand there, and the rest will break into German, grab any prisoner you can out again over the wire. Because German wire was only about that high.
About a foot and a half high,
but about 20 feet across, and it was very thick. And if you run and jumped, you landed right in the middle of it. It was peculiar wire. And he says, we'll go in and get these. So we're full of brave oh no. Oh, another thing, we always got a spoonful of rum, a spoonful. We used to line you up and they'd bring a milk tin, an old tin with rum in, and a tablespoon, and he'd give you that. And I remember one bloke says, what am I supposed to do with this? Get fighting mad? Give him a tablespoonful of rum. And that had already been watered all the way down before we ever got it. We started off on this patrol, moving in towards German wire. The chap was changing his pebbles the distance. One of the lads in the front of the box with this lieutenant, being on a field patrol with us, and he says to the officer, he says, that's a German sentry. And what if the German sentry had been smoking? I mean, you could just see his cigarette end. Yeah? And he says, we better stop here, you know, and the officer said, no, we're bundled on. And we were right near the wire then, right near the wire, and all of a sudden, everything opened up, because the sentry threw his cigarette away, because he'd heard us, you see, and they there was flares going up, and there was firing, there was breathing ammunition firing. We just lay down where we were, and then a sudden there was a stampede from the front. The front just run through us and away, and we were saying, what's happening, what's happening? So we up and joined them. But we all sort of got split up. We got scattered all over the shop. I was on my own, and I found the wire. So I went the opposite way, that was the way out to our line. I hit another wire, and I went right, hit another wire, and I went left, hit another wire, and I couldn't fathom. I was in a box. What had happened, when we'd gone, the sentry would actually gone through an opening in his wire, and we'd actually in his lines when we got fired on, all scattered, and I couldn't fathom. So I found a shell hole, and I dug it bigger with my hands. I remember digging it out, and I got in it. Well, it wasn't big enough. If I got right in, put my feet in, my head was out. So I put my head in, and my feet was out the bottom. I said, well, I'd rather have my feet sticking out as my head sticking out. And I was lying there, wait till this fire and settle down and see what was happening. And I remember I put my tin hat on my face when I was lying there in the shell hole. I was lying, things quiet, and dawn was getting quiet. I said, Mark, and I heard this noise, and then I heard a click, and then I heard this, and I says, oh, that's a bolt of a rifle. And I whipped my helmet off, and there's not a soul there. It'd be my eyelids hitting the inside, and imagination was running amok.
Did you feel panicky?
No, it's funny. I didn't. I mean, if I'd panicked, I would have got up and run around like a hen with him. No, I just lay there till I got myself composed and found out what was happening, you see. I know the ground I was lying amongst, it was all churned up. Actually, it was a minefield I was lying in, because later on we did go there when we moved forward into boot. But I lay there, and then eventually I got up and started moving again. And I seen the searchlights. They're bombing up the harbour in Tobruk. And then I got the bearings where Tobruk was. So I gradually got there. I found a wire, and I found an opening. I went through there. And made my way over no man's land to our wire. It was still pitch dark. And I come to the anti-tank trench, and I says, well, I wonder if this is our position or not. I wasn't quite sure whether it was our positions, you know. I couldn't see nothing. So I laid down, and I heard the voices Now, in front of the wire, outside the wire, we used to have two men patrols. Used to walk, used to go down and report to the next two, and they'd go all the way around Tobruk like that. Well, I was laying, and I was trying to hear whether it was English. I couldn't see, I just hear them. I was trying, I couldn't grasp whether they're English or not. So I lay and lay, and then it got dawn. I thought, well, I'll have to take a chance, I can't lie here. So I stood up in front of the wire and I shouted across, how do you get in here? And I don't know, it was the Essex or some regiment like that, you know. And he just says, oh, go through here, there's a knife rest and you get through, you know. Because there was a funny thing, we used to do all this sort of thing to get prisoners, to find out who was on the inside. Now, a German, they reckon was an officer. He came on his own to our front line. He'd done the same as what I did, but in the dark. And he shouted, is that the Essex? No, no, this is the Durhams. And he just went back to his own land. We were sending drone fight patrols and everything to do it. But we were told after that, you know, just anybody shouts at that, just fire at them.
Had the rest of the patrol got back all right?
Well, when I got back, I come through the Essex into their position. The lieutenant in charge of the position took me in. He gave me a drink of rum, asked me what had happened. I told him, and then he was on the field telephones and that. Well, I know it was about 9 o'clock when I eventually got from their position behind the wire inside to our positions. And I come to the dugout where I was, and my kit bag, what I had, was packed. They thought I was missing in there. And then I found that the other blokes had come back in dribs and drams and were all sent for. And we had to go into the CO's dugout at battalion headquarters. And there was 20 of us in there. Oh, there's one bloke didn't come back, Waterson. He was taken prisoner. We all got in. And the CO says, I want to know what happened. So we told our versions of what happened. Well, what happened, when we were out there, this lieutenant had come back to our lines on his own and reported that the patrol had run away and left him. Yeah? And that's why we were all in front of the CO and we're telling him what happened. That lieutenant was sent down to Cairo, immediately went back next day and destroyed it and taken it away. You know, never seen him anymore.
Do you remember his name?
No. Yeah. No, I can't remember it. I'd rather not, actually. But, it was seemingly what we found out. He was a transport officer, and it was his first patrol. And he had no idea, and he was full of enthusiasm. But when it happened, the rest of us had been weekly and nightly on four times a week, been on these patrols and things like that. Because I remember once, there was a, between, on the Laddam Road, on this position where we were, we're in reserve, and three companies up in the front line, and our company in reserve about 300 yards behind, and we dug in, just ordinary earth dug in, dugouts. And there was, in between, there was a sentry, but he had a dugout, a little trench of his own, and he spent a day there. So I was told I was in this. Well, it was a good number, because all you did, you went there and you just slept more or less. That's all we used to do there. And I no sooner got myself in with my rations and my little trench there, and I was happy. And this bloke come up, he says, you've got to go back. I said, why? He says, you've got to go back. I don't know. He says, I've got to take over. So I went back. I reported the platoon position, and they said again, they says, oh, you're on night patrol. I says, what? No, it wasn't night patrol. He says, no. He says, you're going with Harper, a lad called Jimmy Harper. He says, you have to report to C Company position, this is it, tonight, and the carriers are going to go through an opening made in the wire at C Company's position. The carriers are going to go out and are going to go across the jerrys and are going to do a shoot along his front wire and then come back. He says, and you two have got a Boyd's anti-tank rifle. I don't know if you've seen a Boyd's anti-tank rifle. What a stupid thing it was. He says, and you'll have this. You go out there, you dig a trench. We'll dug on about a foot deep. And it was just deep enough to lie in, the two of us. And we had this Boyd thing facing this gap in the way that was going to be when they took the knife rest, when the carriers went up. He says, your job is to fire at anything that tries to follow the carriers through our wire with a Boyd's anti-tank rifle. So this lad and I, Jimmy Harper, when it got dark, we went out, got in, and the carriers came up. You could hear them miles away coming up. And they went through a position, away across the jetty, and then you could hear the machine gunning. And then they started coming back. And as they were coming back in the dark, the shells and mortars was following them. Yeah. Of course, they come through the opening where this lad and I with the Boyd through when we were left there in the mortar. There was mortars going left, right and centre. This lad and I were covered in blooming sand and everything. And I thought it was my last blooming doings, you know, that you'd never survive this lot. Anyway, things quietened down eventually and the lieutenant in this position shouted us over. He says, come on in. So we went into their dugout. And the officer says, you've done a very good job. He says, considering all the plumbing shell and that, he says, you stopped there. So he went away. Oh, he took us to his dugout, that was it. And he had a big bottle of rum. And he got 2 pint pots, and he gave us a half a pint pot each of rum. And then the telephone went, and he had to go and do something. And we filled the pots up again when he was away. Well, we were both tight as lords, the two of us. And then we had to go back to the position. Well, on the way down to this position, here's this bloke in this dugout, this trench that I... And I remember, it's the only time I've done it, and it's the only time I'll ever do it again. I fired the rifle from the hip, and I just about broke my wrist. You know, like that, this bloke, and he was running down the road, the Laddam Road.
the patrols that you described that went for prisoners, would they be the fighting patrols?
Yes.
Describe the observation patrols.
Observation, and the other one was a fighting patrol to go out and...
And was it always prisoners you were going for? Did you make any attacks on any particular German points with a fighting patrol?
Did you what?
Did you make any attacks on a particular German point as a fighting patrol?
Oh, we did a company attack. Our company, when we changed over from the Australians, the night you said it was quiet, you know, the Australians had a spur in the front line. It jutted out into Jerry lines, and they could observe Jerry from them. While we were moving in, when we first went into Brook, Jerry moved in and took over that position. Of course, it was against the battalion, our Ardyne says, we've got to retake that position. So he says, D Company would do it. There was a big moan went up. D, it's always D Company, you know. So anyway, we night after night, when it was dark, behind our front line, we were practicing the attack of our D Company. There was Vokes was in charge, Captain Sanderson, I think it was Sanderson, was the second in command. And this officer, big chap, oh, he was a nice bloke, big, big young officer, lieutenant. I forget his name. Anyway, the idea was that they put a barrage down, artillery barrage, and they built the prisoner wall cage and everything, and all in ready. We were going to go forward. If one platoon, right, like one platoon there, one there, and one at the back. That was it, one there, and one in front, 3 platoons. We moved forward, and they put this barrage over, the artillery. And it was the first time I'd ever been in a barrage, and it was a peculiar experience. When it opened up, because it was night time, it was a night attack, when it opened up, you think they took all the air away. You couldn't breathe, and it was cordite, and splashing, and banging, and the noise, and flares going up. Because I remember there's a young Scots lad, he's only 18, and this sergeant in charge of our doing says, you stay with Thornthwaite, he'll look after you. He's scared of death. He says, stay there. So When we were going forward under this barrage, we had a rifle with a bayonet on, walking like that. And I looked for him, I couldn't find him. I turned around, he's walking behind me, and he's right, and he's bayonet about half an inch from me, coming back in my neck. And I said, go on this side. And he eventually go again. And we moved up to the wire. We had the Royal Engineer bloke with us. Now, a Bangalore torpedo. He put a Bangalore torpedo on their wire and fired it. And the idea was to rip the wire away so we could go forward into Jerry position. The Plonk, they called it. That was a Plonk. That was the name of the place, Plonk on the ceiling. And he whipped it away, and we're just going forward, and suddenly there was a sheet of flame shot right across in front of the company like that. And we always nicknamed it, and anybody who was there will always remember, we called it the Flaming Kitchen. What it was like a Catherine wheel, a big thing, and you they lit it down when there's an attack coming, and that thing just shot across in front of you. We moved in.
What did it do? What was its purpose?
Well, the idea was the go through the whoever's the infantry was in going in to just go through them. I mean, it was a big thing, maybe about 3 foot, 4 foot down wide, and about 4, 5 foot in height. And there was rockets and all kinds going off on it, and it was just flying forward.
And was this a German thing?